coming around the wagon. You should change out of those wet clothes before you catch a sickness.
Yes, I suppose. Corin, will I see you sometime?
Corin made an exaggerated bow. Most certainly, Your Highness.
I agree. This is not good,
Pedrus muttered. He took a sip of wine, taking time to gather his thoughts.
Still, I am not surprised.
He is a young boy, and, princess or not,
she is a young girl.
And you told me she has admired Corin as a hero since the day he saved her. And their fates are tied, although he said nothing of that to the regent.
Has Corin said anything to you?
Carlana asked. She had not mentioned to her daughter that she saw her almost kissing Corin, but she would have to talk to Arianna about it someday.
No, nothing special. Of course, he does talk about Arianna often, but I expected that was because he was excited to be invited to the palace. Not many servant boys get invited to lunch with the crown princess.
Pedrus swirled the wine in his glass, then gulped it and set the glass down. The discussion had him too upset to enjoy a fine wine.
We shall have to keep them apart, I suppose.
I do think that is best.
In the summer, I would likely be out with the army anyway.
Pedrus glanced at the regent to see her reaction to the idea of the army fighting again. Carlana's frown deepened, so he dropped the subject.
Until then, I can take Corin with me to visit Rhelanon.
As he said it, the idea sounded better and better to Pedrus. Rhelanon province lay to the southeast of Lindon, where springtime came sooner. Duke Magnico, a steady friend of the Trehames, had a cozy guest house where Pedrus could stay, away in the hills, surrounded, as Pedrus remembered, by well-tended gardens, and a lake stocked with fat trout.
Yes, that sounded like a very good idea.
And not just because it would keep Corin and Arianna apart, for young passions to cool.
Such a journey would keep me away for several weeks, probably until the Cornerstone Festival.
You could leave soon, then.
Arianna, we need to talk, Carlana said, as she waved her maids away for privacy. Mother and daughter, regent and crown princess, had been discussing plans for the Cornerstone Festival, and while Carlana had been concerned about seating arrangements for the guests, Arianna had been talking Corin this and Corin that. Half her words were Corin, Corin, Corin.
After the maids had closed the door behind them, Carlana took her daughter's hand gently in her own.
Arianna, I understand that Corin has done wonderful things, amazing things. I understand why you admire him. But you do know there can never be anything between you two.
What?
Arianna protested, a bit too forcefully.
I don't...
Tears in her eyes told that she'd been about to lie.
It's not fair. Corin should be a knight already for saving me. Now he finds the cornerstone and he gets nothing for it.
You know why we can't...
I know why, and I hate it.
It's not fair to Corin.
It's not fair to anyone.
She angrily wiped her tears with a napkin.
Sometimes I hate being princess. Everyone thinks it's so great to be a princess, and it's not. I can't even be friends with a boy, because all the dukes and duchesses want me to marry one of their horrible sons.
We can't all marry for love, Arianna. Not many women do, I'm afraid.
Did you?
Arianna asked through a sniffle.
Did you love Daddy?
Carlana pursed her lips, paused for a moment, then shook her head.
Not when I married him, I didn't love him. I was afraid of him. But later, yes, when I saw how kind he was, how much he cared for me and his people, and then how much he loved you. Yes, I did grow to love him, very dearly. You were afraid of Daddy?
Ariana asked, surprised. Afraid of the man who crawled around the palace on his knees, pretending to be a horse, with his little daughter on his back? Afraid of the man who tucked her into bed at night with a kiss and a bedtime story, not leaving that task to maids?
You have to understand, I was merely the daughter of a minor baron, and my parents weren't especially rich or powerful. My parents' greatest dream was that I would marry a younger son of a duke some day, or perhaps a wealthy merchant. Their true hope was my sister, and she was supposed to go attend the Duchess when your father visited. But my sister fell ill, and I went in her stead. And my mother told me to stay out of the way and not call attention to myself.
Kalana said the last with a touch of still fresh bitterness, a wound that had not fully healed.
Your father noticed me when I was practicing archery, which ladies were allowed to do, and later he noticed me again when I was singing in the choir during dinner one evening. I was in the back row of the choir, mind you, and I don't know how he heard my voice among all the others. He called me forth to sing for him, and I was so nervous I almost fainted, and then I forgot the words to the song. He knew the words, and he sang along with me.
Ariana laughed.
Daddy couldn't sing. Oh, his voice was atrocious.
Kalana laughed also.
But he sang anyway, in front of all the guests, until I remember the words. That was the first kind thing he ever did for me.
Kalana remembered with a wistful smile.
Then why were you afraid of him?
Why?
Because he was the king, silly girl. He had the power of life and death over us all. He was young and strong and so handsome, and all the girls fawned over him. I feared he only wanted to toy with me, like some men do to poor servant girls. And when his emissary came to my parents to ask for my hand in marriage, I didn't know what to think. I'd never lived in a palace. Many of the noble ladies were terribly jealous of me, and they were mean to me.
Mean to you? But you were marrying the king.
Much of the court thought your father made a terrible mistake choosing me, for I brought nothing to the match. No money, no influence, no political advantage. I arrived at the palace a month before the wedding and stayed in the royal apartments. The ladies were sure a dumb country girl like me would soon make a fool of myself in the royal court, and your father would change his mind. I think that just made him more determined to marry me.
Ariana had never before heard the story of how her parents had met.
Do you think I'll marry a man who loves me?
Kalana pulled her daughter close and hugged her.
Oh, honey, I think you'll be a good queen some day, and all your people will love you.
Seeing Ariana almost kiss Corin, and talking with her daughter about silly dreams of marriage, made up Carlana's mind about something she had been considering for almost 2 years. Considering for years, and secretly negotiating for years, and never reaching the point when she felt comfortable committing herself. It was time to put comfort aside, she decided, and take the type of action her critics said she was not capable of. She sent for the ambassador from the Indus Empire to meet in her private chambers. The Bey of Begal arrived with an aide and a pair of guards, and was mildly surprised to see that the regent of Tarador was alone in her ornate sitting room, except for an elderly woman he did not recognize.
Ambassador Uligrabat, please have your guards wait outside the door. I wish to discuss something with you in private, the regent said.
Usay Uligrabat bowed and gestured for his guards to leave.
May my aid remain, Your Highness.
He was hopeful about the absence of the Royal Chancellor, who almost always accompanied Kalana when discussing matters of state.
hopeful, for there were certain matters of state he had been discussing with the regent, which her chancellor was not aware of.
Yes, please. I wish your aid to join us, as we require witnesses.
For this purpose, I have invited the royal scribe. She is my official keeper of records for the realm, including records which need to remain secret for a time.
The ambassador's heart leapt in his chest, soaring with hope that he would soon achieve the result for which the emperor had sent him so far from Indus. He bowed to the woman he now knew as the royal scribe, for her odd robes now made sense. Her sleeves were short, the bottoms of the sleeves were rolled up and pinned near the elbows. Usei supposed that was to keep her sleeves away from fresh ink on documents.
"Please, Ambassador, sit," Carlana said, gesturing to a chair across the low table from where she was seated. It was a rather intimate setting, a setting Carlana had chosen to emphasize the intimate and sensitive nature of their discussions.
"Would you like tea? We recently acquired a supply of masala sam tea leaves."
The royal scribe had heard gossip around the castle of how shockingly expensive a single bag of this special tea had been, a bag no larger than a loaf of bread. The regent must have been very eager to court favour with the ambassador, to pay so much for a bag of dried leaves. While the regent and the ambassador exchanged endless and meaningless pleasantries, the scribe considered how much the price of the ordinary tea she drank at breakfast had soared in price over the past few years. A steep increase in price was a sign, she'd been told by the people who dealt with the realm's finances, of how foreigners feared that Terador was slowly losing the war. For foreigners no longer gave credit to Taradorin merchants, and those merchants were forced to pay in silver or gold. The scribe kept a neutral expression on her face, and glanced out the window, bored of the regent's verbal sparring with the foreigner. She was thinking of her son, who had recently become apprentice to a merchant, and would be leaving home in the springtime to travel far and wide, perhaps even across the sea. Would her son ever travel as far as Indus? The scribe shuddered at the thought of such a long and dangerous journey to a strange foreign land, where people...
"I have decided to sign the treaty,"
Carlana interrupted her scribe's thoughts.
The ambassador's perpetual expression of a pleasant half-smile broke into a genuine smile. The scribe thought the man was pleased that his mission to Tarador had been successful, and he could now look forward to returning home, leaving behind the cold winter rains of Linden.
The ambassador's reserve broke so much that he clapped his hands in delight.
"Thank you, Your Highness. We are most grateful. The prince will be so pleased. I know that he is eager to finally meet you, having heard so much about you."
"And I look forward to meeting him."
"The prince is very handsome, Your Highness. He is considered..."
"Yes, I have seen the portrait. Ambassador, I will sign the treaty with conditions. There are several issues we have not addressed."
The ambassador's broad smile did not waver. Conditions were to be expected, and would not stand in the way of Usei Uligrapat returning to Indus in triumph, to be rewarded by the Raj himself, a grateful Raj. The Bey of Begal was a king in his own right, a king of a land almost half the size of Tarador, which is why the Emperor of Indus had sent the Bey to Tarador as his personal representative, to complete negotiation of the treaty.
"The treaty specifies loan guarantees to Tarador of 800,000 rashtis, which is acceptable," Carlana said, while trying to keep all expression from her face.
"However, the treaty does not specify the exchange rate between Indus rashtis and Taradoran florins. We require the treaty to be enforced at the rate of exchange that is in effect at the time for both initiation of the loan guarantees and for repayment."
The Bey's smile slipped ever so slightly, then returned. With the value of Tarador's currency slipping,
Such a floating exchange rate would make the treaty more expensive for Indus, which would not please the Raj. The Raj would be pleased, however, that the loan price the Bey had negotiated was less than half of what the Raj had allowed.
"Of course, Your Highness. We did not specify an exchange rate, for we expected the rate to vary over the years."
He lied smoothly. The scribe glanced at the window again as the two leaders discussed the dull minutiae of finance. She had been interested to hear that a prince of Indus would be apparently arriving in Linden to meet Karlana. Why had the ambassador said, "finally"? Had the regent been corresponding with a prince? And why? And why would it matter whether the prince was handsome or not?
"Agreed," Karlana said with a nod. "The same conditions will apply, at the time, to the dowry."
"Dowry?"
The scribe almost gasped aloud in surprise.
"A dowry was an exchange of gifts or money in consideration of marriage."
"Marriage?"
"The regent was negotiating to marry a foreign prince. Oh, what a clever woman the regent is, to make such a bold move in Tarador's time of need."
"Of course, Your Highness,"
the Bey said, with his smile not wavering.
"It is entirely reasonable for such conditions to apply to the dowry."
"Of course.
We are in agreement."
"With the financial details settled, then, we can discuss the wedding ceremony."
Karlana was not smiling, her lips drawn tightly. "The marriage will be here, in Linden, in the royal chapel, and will be officiated by a Taradoran priest." Hopefully, thought Karlana, Mother Furless would perform the marriage ceremony.
"Of course, Your Highness. We would be honored for the ceremony uniting our two peoples to be held here, in Linden."
The scribe fairly quivered with excitement at the prospect of a royal wedding in the palace. Even if the people of Indus were foreigners, those of Indus she had seen in Linden were elegant and exotic. The wedding would be a spectacle, an event to lift the spirit of the people of Tarador.
"Our traditions require—"
the Bey began to say.
"Yes, I understand the imperial priests must perform their own ceremony at the heart of the empire in Indus," Karlana said. "So be it. We have no objection."
The scribe wondered at the strange customs of foreigners. The regent was wise to let them perform their pagan ceremonies far from the borders of Tarador. What manner of dress would the regent wear for the wedding? The scribe wondered. In addition to her authority as regent, the Lady Karlana was a former queen of the realm and mother of the crown princess. Would Karlana be getting married to this foreign prince as the regent, or as the crown mother, or both? The scribe could not recall an instance in the long history of Tarador when a regent had married while in office. An office Karlana Trehaime would hold only until Ariana came of age on her 16th birthday. The powerful Empire of Indus would not marry a prince of the Empire to a mere regent. No, the Empire sought marriage because Karlana was the crown mother, and through her, Indus could cement ties to her daughter, the future queen. The scribe thought fondly, and a bit sadly, of the crown princess. The princess had only been 2 years old when the woman, who was now the royal scribe, came to the palace to serve in the royal library, and became the official head scribe 6 years later. The princess had grown into a young woman in that time, and had seen much tragedy and sadness. The invasion of Tarador's western border by Isildur's army, the untimely death of her father in battle, and the long, grinding, wearying war that had been raging hot and cold as long as the princess could remember. The prospect of becoming queen, something most girls could only dream of excitedly, only meant crushing responsibility falling onto Ariana's shoulders. And she, too, would someday have to seek a husband who could bring an advantage to her realm. Marrying for love was not something a crown princess or a queen could ever dream about.
It was so sad that such a kind and lovely girl...
However, Karlana continued, my daughter will not be travelling to Indus. You will perform your ceremony without Ariano. The scribe gasped out loud, shocked.
The regent was not marrying a foreign prince. She was marrying off her own daughter.
Karlana and the ambassador turned sharply to look at the scribe, whose face was red.
Will this be a problem, Your Highness?
The ambassador asked.
No, Karlana answered with a withering stare at her royal scribe.
The scribe looked at the floor and curtsied.
No, Your Highness, Your Grace Ambassador Uli Grapat, I was startled is all. The office of royal scribe has ever been discreet concerning official documents.
Karlana turned back to the ambassador.
This agreement will remain secret until the day before my daughter comes of age.
The smile was gone from Use's face, replaced by a neutral expression.
His Majesty the Emperor is, as I have stated, uncomfortable with this treaty remaining secret for so long.
And we have explained that such secrecy protects the Crown Princess.
Karlana's smile was also gone.
As long as the dukes and duchesses believe there is a possibility that Ariana will marry one of their sons, they will remain content with supporting the regency. If they learn she has been promised to a foreign prince, even a favored prince of a powerful empire, some of the provinces would be tempted into, shall we say, adventures or intrigue.
Use openly frowned, then regained his neutral expression. The Emperor was not concerned about secrecy of the treaty document, for many agreements between nations were secret. He was concerned for the Regent of Tarador's reason for insisting on secrecy. Karlana needed secrecy simply because her hold on power was weak. A weak regent was not able to provide a strong guarantee that the Empire would receive in the future the agreed benefit from the loan guarantees that took effect immediately. Ultimately, it did not matter, Use knew. The negotiations for the secret betrothal of Kalana's daughter to the Emperor's second son had started with the Emperor offering loans, loan guarantees, and even part of his army and navy to Tarador, for the Emperor feared that Tarador would be conquered by the enemy. Against the common demon enemy, Tarador's fight was the fight of all peoples, and if Tarador were to fall, Indus would not last long.
Use nodded. Tarador's internal political matters are your concern, Your Highness. We are agreed then. The terms we discussed here can be added to the treaty document now, and my aide and your scribe can act as witnesses.
Karlana tried to keep her eagerness from showing. Tarador needed this treaty. She needed this treaty. Tarador needed the money from loans to keep fighting the war until after Ariana became queen. Ariana would not be happy when she learned, shortly before her 16th birthday, that she was betrothed to a foreign prince. The people of Indus felt it was the responsibility of parents to find a good match for their children. This match would be good for Ariana, good for her station as queen, and good to ensure the future of the realm. Ariana needed to put aside silly girlish dreams of marrying a servant boy or a wizard, and think about her responsibilities. Prince Noradon would be a good companion, and his presence in the royal household would bring strength and stability to Ariana's reign, for she could rely on a powerful empire as an ally. With a signed treaty in hand, Karlana could simply smile to herself when people accused her of inaction while Aesidor pressed in on Tarador's borders. Merchants would notice their trading partners were allowing credit again. The royal army would see new supplies and reinforcements, including foreign mercenaries. Ariana would see less pressure on her mother from the Regency Council, all of which would ensure Tarador's future and ease Ariana's path to the throne. Her daughter would be unhappy. Her daughter would be furious.
her daughter, would live to become queen.
Yes.
Carlana stood up and offered her hand for the ambassador to shake.
We shall sign the treaty today.
Corin trudged down a hallway inside the castle, bent over by a bundle of laundry that weighed almost as much as he did. He was dead tired, having just arrived back at the castle that morning. Staying at Duke Magnico's guesthouse, a hunting lodge, had been an idyllically peaceful couple of weeks, almost a holiday for Corin. The Duke had been fairly bursting with pride to have the court wizard staying at his hunting lodge, knowing the other dukes would be burning with jealousy, particularly as Pedras had agreed to ride back with Magnico when the Duke journeyed to Linden for the Cornerstone Festival. When the royal courier reached the Duke, announcing that Pedras desired to stay at the Duke's hunting lodge, the Duke had sent his servants into frantic action, scrubbing the already clean lodge top to bottom, stocking the kitchen with food, filling the wine cellar with the wizard's favourite vintages, and clearing winter leaves and brush from the gardens. When they arrived, Pedras and Corin found fresh, early-blooming flowers planted up against the lodge, where the thick timbers provided warmth to the soil, and a retinue of Magnico's servants ready to take care of the court wizard and do most of Corin's work also. Corin did not have to chop wood or clean anything except the room Pedras used as a study. Staying at the lodge was a grand time for Corin. The Duke's library was well stocked with books and maps, the lake was full of fish, and there was an entire countryside for Corin to explore while riding Thunderbolt. It ranged far and wide, sometimes staying away overnight, with the wizard's permission, although the wizard had insisted that at least two guards accompany Corin on his rides. At first, the guards had resented being assigned to a lowly servant, which was unheard of. Why did a mere servant boy need to be guarded, especially deep inside Tarador? Corin didn't understand it either, thinking the wizard didn't trust him not to get lost, but he obeyed his master. And the guards, after getting to know Corin, treated the rides as a holiday also, and a chance to hunt game on the Duke's private lands. During their weeks at the lodge, the first true signs of spring had arrived, with daffodils popping their bright yellow flowers out of the ground, and fruit trees beginning to bloom, and bees buzzing slowly around as if they, too, needed to shake off their winter doldrums. Corin had been sad when Pedras announced it was time to ride back to Linden, and although it was fun travelling with the Duke's caravan, now that he was back at the royal castle, there was much work to be done. Such as a large pile of laundry, wet and muddy from long days on the road. He stopped at the bottom of a staircase, set the bundle of dirty clothes down on the floor, and sat on a step to rest. Two young maids came along the hallway and paused at a window just around a corner. Corin could faintly hear them talking.
"Oh, look! That's Kaer Falco over there. He is so handsome," one girl said with a sigh. "You keep dreaming, Mariska," the other girl laughed. "He is cute. Did you hear about Kaer? Susan, you know Susan, she's a maid for the Falcos. She told me the truth is, it was Kaer's idea to look for the cornerstone in the moonlight." "No, it's true, Tasha. Kaer heard Ariana was searching for the cornerstone, and he reminded her about the guards in the old tower, the ghosts who come out only in a full moon. Kaer figured out the cornerstone had never been moved. He could tell by the marks in the floor there."
"He is clever, that one. And more clever to let the princess take the credit.
You know, the princess is sweet on him."
"Ariana?"
"No," Tasha laughed. "She's a Trehaim. He's a Falco. Like oil and water, they are. Never will mix. Say what you will, but I've seen the way she looks at him."
"You, Mariska? When are you ever around Princess Ariana?"
The girl named Mariska sniffed.
"I am,
sometimes, and I know what I've seen. Sweet on him, she is. Ha! Time to get moving. The dining hall won't clean itself. Oh, hello,
Tasha was startled to notice Corin around the corner.
You're, Corin, is it?
Corin's ears were burning.
Kaya was getting credit for his accomplishment.
Angrily, Corin jumped to his feet and slung the bag of laundry over his shoulder. But it was too heavy, and he fell against the wall, spilling dirty laundry on the floor.
The two girls laughed. Maybe you should take two trips next time, Mariska laughed,
while Tasha bent down to help him scoop sheets back into the bag.
Corin mumbled thanks, picked up the bag, and staggered up the stairs as fast as he could.
Kaya Falco had girls in the castle dreaming about him, while Corin was hauling firewood and laundry, and the maids couldn't even remember his name.
Mariana Sweet and Kaya Falco?
Ha! Corin muttered to himself, then froze on the stairs. He remembered Ariana talking about marriage. She'd said she would probably marry the son of a duke. Kaya was the son of a duke.
Perhaps much had happened while Corin was away. Oh, no. Had Ariana been trying to tell him something, that day weeks ago, while he was stuffing his face with honey cakes and not really listening to her? Ariana was his friend, and Kaya was his friend, so he should be happy for them.
He wasn't. He wasn't happy to think about Ariana with another boy, even though he knew it was useless for a peasant boy to dream about the princess. He was a peasant, a lowly farm boy, a common servant. The class structure in Terrador was rigid. If you were born a commoner, that's where you stayed, and you should know your place. Corin knew his place, but he didn't have to like it.
Around the corner, the two maids paused to look out the window. He's cute, too, Tasha said softly. Who? Mariska asked.
The only men she saw in the courtyard below were a pair of guards, their faces hidden under shadow by their helmets.
Corin, the wizard's boy, he's cute, and everyone knows he spends a lot of time with the princess.
He's cute, Mariska admitted, but I don't know why the princess invites him to dine with her. He's just a servant like us. I don't take tea with Ariana.
Corin does. If the princess is sweet on anyone, it's Corin.
What? Oh, such talk! Where do you get these ideas, Tasha?
If she's not sweet on him, and he's a commoner, then why does she spend so much time with him? Huh?
Ariana forced a smile to freeze on her face, and she waved appropriately. But she was bored, terribly bored. With all the dukes and duchesses gathered in Linden, and such barons, baronesses, and lower-ranked royalty as had been able to make the journey for the Cornerstone Festival, Ariana had to endure endless dinners, parties, receptions, and, worst of all, watch spoiled royal boys show off for her. At least when they were racing horses across the field, she could get interested in watching the horses, regardless of the riders. Sitting in the royal box above the sparring ring, watching the sons of dukes and barons play fight, and hoping to catch her favorable eye, she was completely uninterested. She did her duty, smiling, waving, congratulating the winners, engaging in small talk with the parents who were so hopeful the future queen would find their eligible sons appealing. She found none of them appealing. Not appealing in that way. Oh, to be sure, some of them were handsome, and charming, and well-spoken, and quick with a blade or skilled with a bow, and she appreciated any person who could handle a horse with grace and not brute force. But none of them were as quick with a blade, nor skilled with a bow, as Corin. Not one of them could have ridden Thunderbolt, nor even gotten close to that horse without catching a hoof in the belly, or a bite on the arm. For all their well-polished and well-practiced charm, none of them had the simple, honest grace of Corin. For all their play-acting in the sparring ring, none of them had ever faced true danger, had ever stood up to an enormous bear, nor plunged into a raging, icy river, nor faced a gang of bandits with only a small knife. None of these royal brats had risked death to save the life of a girl they didn't know. Risked death when no one was watching, for no gain but because it was the right thing to do. None of them had saved her life, not even once, while Corin had done it thrice in a single morning. And for all their cleverness, their witty words, none of them had solved an ancient mystery, found a cornerstone that had been hidden for centuries in the spirit world, and given hope to a weary nation that they might someday see victory in a war that had lasted over 1,000 years. And not one of them, nor all of them together, were as handsome as Corin Bladewell in the eyes of the Crown Princess. When a match was ended, and the victor held up his sword triumphantly, chest swelled with pride, face flushed from exertion, eyes twinkling, smiling up at the Crown Princess, Arianna could not help comparing that son of the Duke or Baron to a common farm boy, and find the royal boys lacking. Their fine clothes and polished armor, their shining combed hair, their soft hands that had never done an honest day of work in their lives could not compare to Corin's disheveled servant's clothes, and his tangled curly hair, and his rough hands, hands rough from a life of honest labor. If her mother thought that sending Corin away would make Arianna's feelings cool, her mother was wrong. Mother and daughter had argued after Corin left, mother insisting the journey away from the castle had been the wizard's idea, Arianna not believing a word of it. The wizard suddenly had decided, while spring rains were soaking the ground, to ride many leagues on muddy roads to an isolated hunting lodge. And it was merely a coincidence that the wizard decided to go on this sabbatical just after Arianna almost kissed Corin. Arianna wasn't fooled. Nor was she discouraged. Perhaps there was much of her father in her, for people trying to keep something away from her only made her want it all the more. Her father had wanted to marry the daughter of a minor baron, a land-rich but money-poor family that could bring nothing to the marriage but the girl who the king admired and loved. Adric Trehaim's advisers and his court had all been against the match. To no avail, for Adric was king, and he would do as he wished. Most people, to this very day, considered Adric to have been impulsive and rash in that decision. Arianna, facing the suffocating constraints of her role, found much to admire in her father's action, and thought she understood why he had done that. Tarador was embodied in the king or queen, and the king or queen needed to think of Tarador first and above all. But sometimes, the person who held the office of king or queen needed to be themselves, or there would be nothing left of them. Being away from Corin, and seeing all the eligible royal boys vying for her attention, brought Arianna to a decision she kept to herself. Once she became queen, she would grant Corin Bladewell a knighthood, and a grant of land. Land near Linden, so he would not be far away. She would brush aside the protests of her mother, and her advisers, and her court wizard, if needed, and grant Corin the honors he should have had already. Until she became queen, she would bide her time, and tell no one of her decision. No one except for one person, the future Sir Corin Bladewell. If she could not make Corin a knight now,
She could at least tell him of her intentions and trust him to keep quiet. Now that she had made her decision, she could hardly wait to tell Corin, so much so that she almost wrote a letter to be delivered to him in Relanon. No, a letter simply would not do. Letters could be read by prying eyes. She wanted to see Corin's face when she told him, see the surprise and joy on his face. She imagined seeing his face like that, over and over, and although she was burning up inside to tell him, she would wait for the right moment. She would wait until after the Cornerstone Festival, after the dukes had all departed and the castle was back to normal. The weather should be delightfully warm by then. She would invite Corin out to a picnic lunch in the gazebo by the lake of the Royal Gardens, perhaps for his 14th birthday, which would be soon. Yes, that would be the perfect setting. So she would wait for the perfect day, and everything would be perfect. Until then, she kept the smile frozen on her face, and waved, and politely talked about nothing, and waited. Now that all the dukes and duchesses had arrived for the Cornerstone Festival, Corin was doubly busy, as were all the servants in the castle. Only two dukes, close friends and allies of the Trehames, stayed in the royal palace. The other families maintained homes in the city. Corin was exhausted from running into the city and back, carrying gifts and messages to and from the wizard. Then there were the dinners Pedrus was invited to, the lunches Pedrus hosted in return, the daily rides out into the countryside, and the quiet meetings Pedrus had with the army generals and captains. The only break Corin got was that the weapons master was too busy for Corin's training. The sparring ring was constantly busy with young royals, eager to prove their prowess. After he found the cornerstone, and Kalana announced a festival to celebrate Ariana's great accomplishment, he had been angry. Then, like everyone in the castle and the surrounding city, he'd become swept up in the excitement of the festival. Every day, wagons streamed through the city gate, bearing food, entertainers, even a circus with strange giant animals that Pedrus said were elephants. Now, with 2 days remaining before the festival, Corin only wanted the event to be over, so he could rest. Let Ariana be given credit for finding the cornerstone. She would have to sit through endless speeches and wear hot, scratchy clothes. Corin mostly wanted simply to sleep. Corin, feeling worn out, was not good enough for Niles Faun, who now had his duke living in the city, and Regan Falco was questioning why his son's advisor had been unable to get rid of a simple servant boy. The commoner boy was getting far too much attention from the princess. Excuses would not do. Duke Falco insisted Corin be gone by the end of the summer, one way or another. As long as Corin thought he had friendship and support from the Crown Princess, Faun reasoned, there would be little reason for the boy to leave. How, then, to show Corin that he was nothing but a lowly servant to Ariana and her mother? Faun's latest plan was why Kaya sought out Corin in the stables.
"Hey, Corin! I haven't seen you around lately," Kaya said, trying to lean casually against the worn stall door.
"I've been busy." Corin barely looked up from his work.
"I have an idea," Kaya said, as if it had just occurred to him. "The Regency Council, that is, the royal family and all the dukes and duchesses, are meeting tomorrow to talk about the war and strategy and all that stuff. You want to come as my guest? Pedrus can't make you work while you're with me, right?" He winked.
"Oh, I don't know. I don't think I'm supposed to wear my fancy servant's clothes if I'm not with Pedrus. And he said he's skipping the council meetings. They're all just posturing and speeches.
I've got clothes you can wear. Come on, it will be fun. You can learn a lot watching the dukes and duchesses arguing.
Which is why Kaer's father was making him go.
You may hear something Lord Salva needs to hear, and Arianna will be there.
Oh, then, sure. Corin was eager to see the princess again.
Okay, I'll go.
Hold, Duke Bargan grumbled, pointing one of his pudgy fingers across the table at Corin, who was sitting in the row of chairs behind Kaer and his father. Who is this boy? I don't recognize him.
Regent Falco drew himself upright in his chair and fixed Bargan with an icy stare.
He is a close friend of my son and a guest of the Falcos. Kaer can attest to his good character.
Bargan snorted and waved his hand.
I don't care if he's your knight's champion, Falco. Meetings of the Regency Council are for royalty only. That's the law. Regent Carlana, you allow this?
Carlana winced. A petty dispute to start the meeting was the last thing she needed, and she silently cursed Corin for causing the trouble. Defending the Falcos in formal session of the council almost made her choke on her words.
If Duke Falco wants...
Bargan cut her off. I don't care what Falco wants. The law is clear. I remind you, it is the law that put you on that throne now instead of your daughter.
Mother! Arianna leans to whisper harshly in her mother's ear. Not now, Arianna,
Carlana whispered back. She could not understand why Bargan was arguing with Falco. Those two were strong allies.
What was really going on, she wondered. The law is the law, and we must follow the law more than anyone else. You are the Crown Princess. You need to speak.
Arianna swallowed her anger, the taste bitter in her mouth. She stared straight ahead to avoid looking at Corin while she spoke, her voice barely above a whisper.
The law is clear. Corin must leave.
Corin's face burned with shame. He looked down, avoiding everyone's eyes. He had been hoping, expecting even, that Arianna would speak up for him. Instead, he had been dismissed. Corin pushed his chair back and stood up. Remembering his manners, he bowed to Duke Falco, then to the throne, although he couldn't look at any of them. Taking extra care not to stumble over his own feet, he walked out of the hall with what little dignity he had left. Apparently, much indeed had happened while he had been away. Hours later, Kaer found Corin chopping wood out behind the stables. Corin had changed into his grubby work clothes and must have been chopping wood for a while, because he had a large pile of wood already cut, split, and stacked.
Corin, I'm sorry. It's my fault. I knew the law, but no one was enforcing it for years. Bargan was being a jerk. Arianna should have told Bargan to be silent.
She could do that?
Corin asked, so surprised that he almost sank the axe into his foot instead of a log. Kaer shrugged.
She's the Crown Princess, and Carlana is the regent. The law is the law, but sometimes the law is whatever the royal family says it is. Allowing only royalty into the Regency Council is more of a tradition than a law.
Corin acted like he didn't care, while his teeth clenched in anger. Arianna could have saved him from being humiliated in front of the assembled royals. Instead, she had dismissed him.
It doesn't matter. It was probably boring anyway.
I think Carlana is mad at you for causing a scene.
Kaer placed a new log on the chopping block.
I'd stay out of her sight for a while, if I were you.
Corin took aim with the axe and split the wood with one angry blow.
I haven't been to the palace in a long time, and I've never seen the regent while I'm doing laundry
or splitting wood. Corin slowly climbed the stairs of the tower, carrying dinner for Pedras. The scent of the roast beef and potatoes were making his mouth water, but he was so tired from chopping wood that all he really wanted was to skip eating and crawl into bed. The door was open. The wizard was looking at a pile of scrolls on the table, shifting them from one pile to another.
"Ah, Corin, there you are. Set the food down over there, please. We have much to do tonight, and time is short."
"Tonight, sir," Corin groaned. The sun was already setting when Corin had crossed the courtyard from the royal kitchens.
"Yes,"
Pedro said, as he dug through a chest and pulled out a well-worn pair of traveling boots.
"We are leaving tonight."
Corin's shoulders slumped.
"Leaving again, sir? So soon?"
Pedras paused to stare at his servant.
"Oh, I forgot to tell you. Yes, the regent has refused to send the army out this summer, despite my advice, and the advice of, well, we can discuss that later."
The wizard moved his lips like he had something sour in his mouth.
"The point is, she has agreed I should visit one of our allies to strengthen our alliance in advance of the summer. We are bringing an army troop with us, a full century of soldiers. Captain Radic and I decided we would leave as soon as possible, before the regent changes her mind. It is unfortunate that we'll miss the festival, but it cannot be helped. How soon can you be packed?"
Now Corin regretted not getting dinner for himself.
How long will we be gone, sir?"
"The journey to Hofstad will be 3 weeks. Better plan on 4 if we run into bad weather. Don't worry about food. The army quartermaster will take care of that. I'll need my best robes for when we are in Hofstad. Let's see.
Corin bowed and started to back out of the room before the wizard decided to pack the entire contents of the tower.
"I will take care of it, sir. We should be ready in a turn of the glass."
"Very well. Good. Good. Send word to Captain Radic to expect us, then."
It was 2 turns of the glass before the army troop rode out the gates of the castle, amidst much cursing, shouting, and general complaining about the lateness of the hour. And at the prospect of missing the festival, where there was sure to be food and drink and much merriment. As they wound their way down through the streets of the city, Corin looked back at the grey stone walls of the castle and the white palace lit by torches. Despite being tired and hungry, Corin was glad to be getting away from the castle, away from the maids who barely knew his name, away from the royals and their stupid rules, away from being embarrassed in front of a hall full of people, away from fickle princesses who liked him one day and ignored him the next. As far as Corin was concerned that night, he didn't care if he ever came back. Chapter 9. Arianna woke late, hiding her eyes from the bright sunshine, as her maid pulled the curtains from her window. She had stayed up very late, with her mother and the Dukes, discussing boring affairs of state until she was barely able to keep her eyes open. What she had wanted to do last night, instead of listening to Dukes give speeches, was to find Corin and tell him how sorry she was that he had been cast out of the Regency Council meeting. Any rule that said a true hero like Corin could not attend such a meeting was a stupid rule, and she intended to change those rules when she wore the Queen's crown on her head. And make Corin royalty anyway, by granting him the knighthood he should have already. This morning, she would start by inviting her hero to lunch, to apologize in person, and maybe tell him about his future knighthood that very day, if the moment seemed to be right. After all, there was no reason she had to wait for his birthday to give him a present.
"Good morning, Susanna. It looks like a fine day," Arianna said, as she sat up
stretched her arms and yawned. The maid curtsied.
Good morning, Your Highness. It is indeed a fine day. Will you be taking a ride before your lessons?
I will have breakfast first. Bring me a pen and paper. I wish to send a note to invite Corin Bladewell to lunch with me today.
But, my lady...
Ariana waved away her maid's protest.
I know what my mother says about me having boys here in my chambers, so we will dine in the royal hall. And I don't care what my mother thinks,
she added, almost under her breath. Her mother should be the one to apologize to Corin. But since that would never happen, Ariana would do it herself.
But, my lady, the wizard and his servant rode out with Captain Radic last night. Going to Hofstra, they are.
Hofstra? Ariana exclaimed. She remembered her mother discussing Hofstra with some of the dukes. She couldn't remember what was said.
But that is so far away.
Corin won't be back for months.
Yes, my lady. You won't be needing the pen and paper, then?
No, Ariana shouted, and pulled the covers over her head to hide her tears. Corin had left the castle before she could tell him she was sorry.
He must think I'm horrible,
she sobbed to herself. Sending Corin away again must have been her mother's idea. She threw the covers off and slid her feet onto the floor. Get my dress. I will speak with my mother right away.
No, I didn't send Lord Salva away to get Corin out of the castle. Whatever gave you that silly idea?
Kalana asked as she bit into a piece of buttered toast.
If you had been paying attention the past week, Pedrus wants me to send the army out again this summer, and he persuaded more than half the dukes to agree with him.
I told them that I am not risking the army on another adventure, but what I did agree to was sending a troop of soldiers and Lord Salva to Hofstra.
King Perrinin of Hofstra is nervous about Asador raiding his coast, and he has been wavering in his alliance with Tarador. Pedrus and Captain Radic are going there to show our support for Hofstra.
But they left in the middle of the night. I didn't get a chance to tell Corin I was sorry for throwing him out of the council meeting.
Kalana shrugged.
Departing in the night was Captain Radic's decision, and crown princesses do not apologize to servant boys.
You did nothing wrong, Ariana. Corin should not have been there. If anyone is to blame, it is the Falcos.
Ariana still had her arms across her chest, defiant. You can't blame...
Why was Corin with the Falcos? Kalana interrupted. He had no business being there.
The wizard's boy sitting with our political rivals.
Kyr is Corin's friend, Ariana said with a frown.
Kalana's laugh was bitter.
Falcos do not make friends with servant boys. What game is Regan playing? It disturbs me that a boy my daughter is so infatuated with is...
I don't have a crush on Corin,
Ariana protested weakly.
Kalana appraised her daughter with a cool eye, then held out her hand.
Ariana, dear, sit down, please.
You forget, I was your age one time, and I know what it is like to have a crush on a boy.
The regent sighed. Corin saved your life, and he discovered the cornerstone. Of course he's a hero to you.
He's a hero to everyone, if everyone knew.
If everyone knew, the enemy would know, and it would not be healthy for Corin to have the enemy's eyes fixed upon him.
The enemy's eye is fixed on us.
Yes, and that is why we live in a castle surrounded by soldiers, and you take a dozen guards with you whenever you ride outside these walls.
Corin is under Lord Salva's protection. That is why he was brought to live with Pedrus.
Ariana.
Kalana took her daughter's hands in her own.
I also think Corin is an extraordinary boy. And I see why you admire him, but do you understand that you are a princess, and he is a commoner, and there can never be anything between you?
Arianna nodded reluctantly, defiant.
Yes, mother.